This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. The auto industry has so often been a lens for us in understanding trends in American business and American life. This year, that's probably as true as it's ever been. Like so many American businesses, car makers have dealt with pandemic issues in 2020 relating to the global supply chain, its workforce. And the Black Lives Matter movement has as much to say about factories and design shops and dealerships as it does about police departments. The big three are still facing fundamental questions about where they're headed. Everyone thought we'd be spending 2020 talking about a new generation of electric and autonomous vehicles. It's not clear whether those changes will still be at the top of the agenda. For the first time in its history, Car and Driver magazine, one of the leading publications in the industry, has a woman leading that conversation. Sharon Silk Cardi is editor-in-chief at Car and Driver, and she joins us now. Sharon, welcome to Stateside.
Thanks, April. Happy to be here.
Well, I'm sure this is an understatement to say that it's not the 2020 anybody imagined, but Car and Driver's main job is in no small part reviews, telling people things they might want to know about cars that they might want to buy. Has anything essential changed about delivering that information?
Oh, boy. Yeah. I mean, we, for a while, just weren't getting any new cars or many new cars. The whole process of everything that we do kind of ground to a halt, like everybody else. So a lot of our reviews actually happen on the road. And so we fly to some place and we meet the automaker there and they have cars there. And, you know, we go through these fancy drives in these fancy places, which make for really good photos and for fun stories. And just all of that stopped. So we've had to be really creative with what we do and what we take a look at.
What do you write about when there are no new cars?
Well, we did an issue that we called the Bug Out Guide, which was essentially like, what do you do in a disaster scenario, motivated by what was happening in the world? So, you know, road trips and how to fix your own cars and, you know, all of the fun things that we could think of doing while we were stuck in our house. We ended up doing another issue, which was we called the GOAT edition, which was just the greatest of all time, where we've looked at like all of our favorite cars since the magazine started in 1955. And, you know, we've just slowly been trying to piece it all together. We've run a lot of archive reviews online, so stuff that normally had just been in the magazine, you know, from the 60s, 70s, and 80s. We found a way to get that all online. So we're adapting and we're rolling with it, but it's not been at all what we expected.
Before Car and Driver, you led a team at Automotive News that looked at urban mobility, and you were there to witness this long, slow build going on, often behind the scenes at the automakers toward autonomous vehicles, hybrid engines, electric engines, and sort of rethinking cars' effect on our cities and our environment. Where do you see that conversation standing right now?
Well, I think all of that work is still happening, but I think we haven't yet seen the full financial impact of everything that's happened. You know, last time there was a major financial crisis in 2008, 2009, the auto industry really was like the center, or at least one of the centerpiece topics during that, because it was such a major impact. This crisis is totally different in that, like, you know, the auto industry is going through the same stuff it went through in 2008, 2009. It's just, there's so many other voices and so many other impacted communities that, you know, nobody's really kind of fully addressing what's happening in the auto industry. So at the moment, I think everything is still chugging along as planned. I don't think we've seen the full financial brunt. A lot of that innovation is just so costly.
Yeah, and cars are one of those things where you sort of have to anticipate the consumer market a couple of years ahead of time. It's not like just-in-time delivery can present you with what people want, you know, 3 months after somebody decides that they want it.
Right. And so there's this huge, you know, will people be able to afford new cars? The average transaction price on a new car right now is $38,000. You know, and that actually hasn't gone down over the last few months. Like, it's stayed pretty consistent. The inventory of new cars is down, so they're able to kind of, like, there's the supply and demand thing is working in their favor. But, you know, there's discussions like, do people want are people going to be commuting to work? How is that going to impact things? Will anybody take buses and public transit anymore? Like, how is that going to impact things? So it's just wild right now. Nobody knows. It's just, it feels like we're in stasis and we're just like waiting to for something to happen to at least kind of have a feeling of where things are going.
Do you foresee the big three still being in a position to invest in new electric technologies and autonomous technologies on the other side of this?
I think that they will. I think that they've made some really hard financial decisions in the last few years that show that they recognize that a lot of that is the future. If the U.S. politically is not behind electric cars or fuel economy and all that stuff, the rest of the world appears to be. And the auto industry is now a very much a global, you can't just make something for the car U.S. car market, right? Like, you've got to make something that you can sell almost anywhere. The automakers seem to recognize that they need to be making those investments to keep up with the rest of the world. And so they're making decisions like, you know, Ford has walked away from sedans, you know, like they just are not making them except for a couple. General Motors walked away from Europe, you know, like they were just like, we're not making any money here. So we're just, instead of continuing to try this, like we'll just walk away. And that those are hard decisions to make, but then you can take that money that you save and put it into investing in your future. And that's crucially important.
Yeah. We learned in recent weeks that Ford's CEO, Jim Hackett, is retiring. And he's done the things that ostensibly any auto company board would want in more popular SUVs, more investments in electric technology at the same time. And yet it wasn't enough to prolong his tenure. I mean, is there anything the industry can do to thread the needle at a time of wild economic upheaval?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting case because I think that a lot of the traditional automakers face this conundrum of that they're always being compared to Tesla. And Tesla, because they have no gas-powered cars, like if you're a diehard environmentalist or you're, you know, there's no, you're not feeling like you're funding sort of big oil when you buy a car from Tesla. And there's no way for them to really compete with that. And they can really be doing an excellent job on many levels, but they can't compete with a Tesla with that mindset. And so, you know, for publicly traded companies, it's a really difficult task. I'm not sure that there is really very much that they can do right now other than completely reinvent themselves. And that's a long, hard task to undertake and could take decades.
Yeah, no pressure.
Right.
There are a lot of other things going on right now. This month's issue of Car and Driver includes an interview with NASCAR's Bubba Wallace. He is the only Black driver at his level in the industry. And he talks about the fact that he didn't really pay attention to racism within NASCAR when he was younger, but he sounds ready to address it now. And he talked to your reporter about why it's important for everyone to understand why Black people are angry right now and understand why they're hurt. What kind of feedback did you get on the article?
We're getting a lot of negative feedback on it, which is not surprising to me, because it's not uncommon to touch on something that's fairly political in automotive, you know, enthusiasm. And the feedback that you get almost right away is, this is not what I want you to talk about. I don't come to you to talk about serious topics. I come to you because I want to be distracted from the outside world. And it's, you know, it doesn't go unnoticed by me that these are largely male voices who are writing these emails. And it's interesting because as a woman in the industry, you know, it's, I can never really escape being a woman in the industry. You know, like I, that's not something I can walk away from. Like I just, it is. And sometimes it's an issue and sometimes it's not. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, luckily, it's not. But it's still like every time I walk into a meeting, like it is what it is. And I know that I'm being viewed in a different way from other folks.
You know, it was interesting that you did an interview with General Motors' Mary Barra a couple of years ago, in which she said that she never really thought about her position as being one of the lone female executives in the industry until she became aware that she was a figure of inspiration for people. whether or not we believe that she really didn't think too much about it or whether it didn't really have an impact on her life, it seems like she was reacting to a need that people have to believe that it doesn't matter. I wonder if you think the auto industry is in a place where it's ready to start talking about some of those issues that might lead a driver like Bubba Wallace or a CEO like Mary Barra to say, it hasn't mattered in my career.
That's really interesting. Yeah, that conversation with Mary Barra was incredibly interesting because that's obviously not been my experience that it doesn't matter. It was interesting to hear her say that, but it also was really interesting to have her like acknowledge that it is important to people. I don't think she wanted it to matter, right? I think she wanted just to be judged on her own skills and abilities, which is what we all want to have happen. But the positive feedback that she got, you know, really kind of made her realize that, yeah, this is a big deal, and it can actually be really cool. That's what I'm hoping that these conversations, like the one we had about Bubba Wallace and the conversations that we're going to continue to have, because we're not going to shy away from it, even if it makes people uncomfortable, that it will sort of, even if it makes our current readership uncomfortable, that maybe it will welcome in a new generation of folks who are excited by the fact that we're finally talking about these topics and who feel welcome in the pages of Car and Driver where they may not have before. And I don't think that you make people feel welcome by ignoring issues, right? You actually have to address it. You actually have to say, like, yeah, this is the thing that's going on. And, you know, let's have this conversation.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Sharon Silk Cardi. She's editor-in-chief at Car and Driver magazine. Are there cars that are on the market right now that you are excited about?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely. Do you want me to go through the list? Because it could be kind of long.
go nuts.
Well, I'm a big SUV. Not SUV. I really like off-roading. So I'm really into the new Jeep Gladiator, which we had in a little while ago. It's a ridiculous truck. It makes me feel like I'm just kind of, you know, burning fossil fuels for no reason whatsoever, but it's just so much fun. And there's a lot of cars that are just a lot of fun. And the coronavirus has slowed down a lot of production of vehicles. But I think that the industry is not going to lose that level of fun. It's a great place to be. And it's exciting. I really hope that we can kind of broaden this level of enthusiasm, because I think for a really long time, the walls to becoming an enthusiast were up pretty high. Like, you had to prove a certain level of knowledge. You had to prove a certain level of, you know, driving ability.
You had to be able to change your own spark plugs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, you just had to be this certain kind of person. And I think, you know, more and more people are proving that you don't actually have to fit these molds. And we really want to welcome in, like, you know, all sorts of whatever it is, whatever you're interested in, whoever you are, whatever your background is. Like, we want to welcome you into that, because this place is, this little slice of the universe can be just tremendously rewarding and a lot of fun.
You know, I'm interested that you favor the Gladiator, given the intense tsunami-like marketing push that Ford has subjected us all to for the Bronco. Why does the Gladiator get your nod?
You know, I am a bit of a Jeep girl. I love Jeeps so much. I am really excited to drive the Bronco, and there's a really solid chance that it will change my mind. But I just have had, it's one of those things, I've just had sort of a bias towards Jeeps for a very, very long time.
What's your best ever Jeep?
So there's a Jeep Rubicon in this Sahara yellow color that I absolutely love. I don't own it myself, but I might one day. I like the Jeeps that just, like, will do pretty much anything. Like, rock crawling and going about 5 miles an hour over a giant rock is, for me, incredibly, incredibly fun and thrilling. I can't quite explain it, but yeah, I like to know that if the zombie apocalypse comes, I can just sort of drive over anything and get where I need to go.
You know, it is so interesting to me. I think people always assume that car people and car journalists want the newest, hottest, but I feel like most of the ones I've met are much more interested in older models.
Yeah, and really interested in just sort of, like, you know, this one feature that has just, you know, made them really crazy and really, you know, pique their mind. And so they're just going to be fascinated with this thing because it's air cooled or because it makes this noise or something. Like, and real car people generally just don't have one favorite. They've got like a list of 12 things that they'll talk your ear off about.
It strikes me that the automotive press has a really unique challenge right now in that, to the extent there are cars to review, it's not like you can't drive them anywhere, but people aren't necessarily taking the kinds of drives either to work or sometimes for vacation that they would have in a different year than 2020. How are you dealing with that?
Well, I mean, we're doing as much driving as we can. We have like certain quotas that we have to hit on certain cars. So we're driving as much as we can. And what we're seeing is that people are taking road trips and staying closer to home. You know, the RV market is actually quite booming. Like, people are trying to drive with their own hotel room behind them because they don't want to go into hotels and they don't want to be in planes. So I think that there is some shortages of some models of cars. And so, you know, people are definitely still getting out there. It's just, again, this sort of stasis where everybody's not quite sure where we're heading. And so there's a lot of caution in the industry at the moment.
Please tell me that I don't need to get ready for the October issue of RVN Driver.
No, although I did joke in our recent, in our upcoming letter to the editor that we're renaming it SUV and Driver. So I'm going to be eagerly awaiting the letters on that one.
Right. As you mentioned, there are some companies that are really just kind of abandoning the sedan market. But outside of SUVs and light trucks, are there any cars coming out that we should be aware of that might be a focus for consumer trends in 2021?
Well, the Mercedes is unveiling its new S-Class pretty soon. And Mercedes is really interesting because they invest a ton in sort of like near autonomous technology. And they're really very good. You know, Tesla likes to market its autopilot as self-driving technology, but I would say Mercedes is actually sort of the closest to it because they've been working on it for a very long time and it's very well refined. So that is definitely one to keep an eye on.
Have you been in autonomous vehicles?
Yeah, I've been in the Google car, the Waymo self-driving car. I've done autopilot on Tesla Model 3, but I don't consider the autopilot self-driving car because technically it's not self-driving if you have to have a driver behind the wheel. So
right.
There are like no self-driving cars on the market right now. There's adaptive technology that helps you stay in your lane and cruise control that will like slow down if it sees a car in front of you. But there's actually zero self-driving cars on the market right now. But I have been in pre-production vehicles. I've been in some, you know, that will drive around a test track, and I've been around some that will drive around like certain areas in Silicon Valley. And, you know, what the most striking thing about them is that they get boring very fast. Like momentarily, you're like, oh, wow, this is really cool. And then it's just like, oh, it's just driving like anybody else is driving. It's like being in a taxi. It's just doing its thing.
But Sharon, that gives you unprecedented opportunities to stare at your phone, right?
Exactly, which we all need more of.
Sharon Carty is the editor-in-chief of Car and Driver magazine. It's a pleasure to talk to you, Sharon. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, April.